So I want to plunge the audience into a controversy which is going on at the moment in the issue of coherences in natural light harvesting processes. And I'll try and explain the problem, although quite frankly, it becomes increasingly difficult to go into the nuances of what's going on. So I'll try and stay on the surface of the issue, but give you an idea of what's happening and what our perspective is. So the interest is whether or not there are quantum effects beyond simple quantum effects, such as potential energy surfaces and tunneling and so on, that occur in natural light harvesting processes. Why do we care? We care because people want to build solar cells. We care because we want to understand biological systems. We want to learn from them. And so several years ago, and continuing experiments show sort of highly unexpected timescales for coherences in rather large systems. For the audience who are not involved in such molecular systems, the interest should come from the fact that, as you will see, coherences appear to be occurring in very complicated systems with very large baths. And so somehow or other, it appears that nature is managing to maintain coherence even though there is such a large system bath coupling and such a large opportunity for dephasing and decoherence. But the thing is that these observations have prompted many enthusiastic remarks saying that quantum coherence effects are therefore active, prominent in natural systems. And in doing so, they've ignored the fundamental feature that I want to talk about, which is the nature of the light and what the difference is between an experiment going on in the laboratory and what nature is actually doing. But look at these kind of words. These are words just taken from literature to give you a feeling for the enthusiasm. This one I love the best. It turns out that bacteria, this is really a quote from a very prominent scientist. This is not a made-up story. It turns out that bacteria have been up to quantum computation for hundreds of millions of years. So all of you out here are trying to build quantum computers, just give it up. Nature has already done it, and you just have to look at a bacteria to figure it out. This one I also like, now that non-trivial quantum effects have been unambiguously, I like the word unambiguously, shown in biology, let's make a sensor. And then we are witnessing the dawn of quantum biology. I should point out that the dawn of quantum biology occurs every 40 years or so. If you look back about 40 years, you'll see discussions about the dawn of quantum biology again. So there is related enthusiasm for not just photosynthetic light harvesting systems, which I'm going to talk about, but for the dynamics of retinal and vision. And one sees in all these cases apparent quantum coherent dynamics in a very hostile environment. What do I mean by a hostile environment? Well, here's the retinal case. Retinal undergoes a change in conformation from cis to trans, and that is the reason why you manage to see me, because as the light hits your eye, there's a cis-trans isomerization, and this triggers a whole sequence of processes which ends up in your brain. And here is this molecule, 11-cis-retinal, and you can see it's embedded in this massive molecular structure, architecture, which interacts with the molecule. And yet, coherence to survive, and Duane is going to talk about this, I'm sure, later today. So for these highly unexpected timescales were observed in coherent experiments, and I'll show you. And these are totally unexpected because I say there's tremendous opportunity for decoherence. Now, I'm going to clarify what I mean the word coherence because this is very important. I mean the time dependence in an isolated system by a superposition of states, C1, Phi1 plus C2, Phi2, giving me an initial state psi 0, and then it evolves in time like this. Why does it say Swedish political party here? Well, there is a Swedish political party that has one of its platform elements, banning of PowerPoint. And I strongly believe that that party should be supported. I sort of gave up on writing these equations out at this point, and I'm going to support the Swedish political party. I think PowerPoint is an evil. In an open system, what I mean are time-dependent, off-diagonal matrix elements of the system density matrix in the system energy eigenbasis. So if I have an open system, I look at the system, I look at off-diagonal elements in the system energy eigenbasis. If they're evolving in time, that's what's called coherence. And this is necessary to clarify because the word is used repeatedly in different ways in the literature. Let me just break for just 1 second to advise the audience that there is, with respect to the quantum control issue, a new book. We're not going to talk about this work, but I just want to point out that we've spent a lot of time on quantum control. People who are interested in the quantum control situation at the moment might find this book by me and Moshe Shapiro of interest. So with this, I can start discussing this kind of system. This is a requisite slide that you have to show in the photosynthetic game. This is just a sort of a little picture. Photon comes in, energy dances around within a whole bunch of molecular species and ends up in some region where there is some reaction. And the question in the community at the start was, is this diffusive hopping or is this quantum coherent wave-like results? Now, everybody, don't panic here because, in fact, even the experimentalist hasn't dealt with this system. This is the light harvesting region of this molecule, which is sort of one of the most widely studied molecules called FMO. And what happens is there is an absorption of light by this light harvesting region, and then there is a reaction center down here. And right here is this little molecule which has been extracted and studied at length, and it's called FMO. It itself is still rather complicated. It has these closely packed units, and there are 7 of them, and they're arranged in some spatial configuration like this. And this has been studied at length. And if you take this system, as Graham Fleming did, and you put it into a 2D electronic spectroscopy experiment, which coherently pumps the system, waits for a while, coherently pumps it again, waits a certain amount of time, pumps again and looks at a signal, then what they observe is signals, although this is a calculation, the experiment looks pretty much the same, where they got oscillations in all sorts of characteristics of the flow of energy from, say, here to here to here and so on. And one can computation show all these very nicely. The flow is oscillatory. Here it goes from site 1, goes to site 2, and so on. This is at 77 degrees. There's, of course, a shorter time at 300 degrees and so on. But the trick is that one is seeing these oscillations, which are signals of coherent evolution in the system. And there's another example, PC645, which is, again, a rather complicated structure, which was studied in Greg Scholes' lab. And here one again sees oscillations in the signal. I don't want to go into this. Perhaps David Jonas might, or Duane, I'm not sure. But one looks at off-diagonal peaks in these 2D photon echo experiments. And when one sees oscillations, one links them to the idea of observed coherences. And this has been done in FMO and PC645, and they have even seen longer-lived coherences in recent experiments, say, in Greg Engel's lab. And this generated a tremendous amount of surprise and a tremendous amount of interest because the timescales anticipated for electronic coherence at the time were much, 50 femtoseconds. They're seeing 400, now they're seeing 2 picoseconds. And there was a tremendous effort on the part of a lot of people to try and understand this, given that there were a whole bunch of computations and studies that showed when you look at electronic states, which are coherently related to one another initially in a large molecule, you get timescales of decoherence on the order of 10 femtoseconds. And here they're seeing 400, 600, 800, and so on. The question was why, and people have studied this in various ways, and I won't discuss our model or some other people's models and so on. It's not the focus of this talk. But I just want to point out one thing, which is not relevant to what I want to say, but it is relevant to the status of the field, and that is that the original enthusiasm was with electronic coherence. And now there are ongoing debates, which I think you'll hear about, as to whether this is really vibrational, is it electronic, and so on. But as you will see, my analysis really does not suffer from whether it's electronic or vibrational coherences, although this is a very important development in the field. So the question is, are these coherences important in nature? And there are two examples, light harvesting and vision, and I'll just focus on the first. And I'll just make a statement at the bottom. Optics people in the audience, or maybe others, may be astounded at the confusion at the moment in the field that that I hope this approach will resolve. So this is the point. Many photoexcitation experiments that we're talking about are done with coherent light. But nature doesn't know about coherent light. Nature uses incoherent sources. The coherence time of sunlight is about 1.32 femtoseconds. It's a 5,500 degree black body source, has a timescale of 1.32 femtoseconds. So the question is, what is the relationship between these two cases? And furthermore, given that if there is no relationship, then are these observed coherence evidence for coherent quantum contributions in nature, which uses incoherent light? So for those of you who want the answers up front, what do coherent light experiments tell us about the natural case? They tell us about the nature of the Hamiltonian. They tell us about the couplings between the system and the environment, and so on. Are these observed coherences evidence for coherent quantum contribution in nature? I say no, since, as I will show you, under natural light conditions, one gets no time-evolving coherences. These coherences are intimately related to the kind of experiment that's actually going on, the coherent experiment. Okay, so there are two cases I want to talk about. One is an isolated system, and one is an open system. And in either case, the conclusions are qualitatively similar. So let me first talk about the isolated case. The isolated case has been examined on and off for a long time. In 1991, I wrote a set of papers on creation of dynamics of molecular states with coherent versus partially coherent pulse flight, and I used it for control considerations as well. And I'll show you that treatment because it remains sound, and it just says the following, and it's simple. These light sources are, sunlight is not a laser, it has very weak, low intensity and so on. So let me treat it by first order perturbation theory to see what the created state is. So here's my Hamiltonian, it's the molecule interacting with the radiation field. I don't need a quantized radiation field, although I will do it again shortly with a quantized radiation field. First order perturbation theory gives me the wave function as the ground state plus this excited component where the CIs are the dipole transition matrix elements from the ground state to the excited electronic state EI. I can construct the density matrix just by taking the product of phi of t with the complex conjugate of phi of t. And then we can look at two cases, the coherent source or the incoherent source. So if the source is not coherent, it has to be described statistically, which means that I can't use a density matrix of that form. I have to average the density matrix over the correlation function of the electric field that appears here and here. So all I've done is to say statistical light that is not coherent, I have to at least average over the ensemble of light. So two cases. I just note that I just note that there's a Fourier transform here that I can use. Omega IG is the energy, is the frequency for the transition between the ground and state I. This should be JG. There's an error here. And then when I do this, I just can rewrite this in terms of the correlation function of omega IG and omega JG. And again, that error carried through here. So the question, it is a coherent source. Then I just throw in the field. It looks like this, some pulse with some phase and some central frequency. And the wave function looks like this, and it just evolves in time. So we all know this. You take a system, you put it in a light field. It creates a linear superposition of eigenstates of the Hamiltonian, and it evolves. There's no mystery here. And similarly, there's no mystery if I have an incoherent source. I can take, there are many, many models. This is a collisional model for the origin of the incoherences. There's a tau d, which tells us the time scale between collisions. So I have an atom, it's trying to radiate, and it keeps getting hit on the average at time tau d. I'm looking at a simple case where The electric field is simply of this simple type with one frequency. You can do it with lots. And then what happens is crucial here. The Fourier transform has a delta function in omega ig, omega jg. If you go back to the top, if omega ig, omega jg is a delta function, then ei is forced to be ej, which means there are no cross terms, which means there's no coherence terms. All you have are stationary states, period. So an incoherent source, after a little while, very short time, transient time, the transient time is just sort of a turn on, you turn it on, it goes, oh, you know, like this, and then after that it just gives you stationary states. In the case I showed you, the source is on forever, if we start at time zero, then you can actually see a little transient time. So from the plant, you know, sunrise for the plant, I'm about to undergo photosynthesis, the sun comes up, for 150 femtoseconds I display this coherent evolution due to the onset of the light, and then from there on I'm just bathing in the sun, and all I'm doing is in this collection of stationary states. Sunrise for the plant. So that's it, I'm done. The laser, well, at least for an isolated system, a laser source creates coherence over a pulse time scale. We've shown that before. A femtosecond pulse will produce femtosecond dynamics if the spectrum allows it. An incoherent source creates stationary states. And again, I mean by no coherence, I mean no coherent dynamics. None of those off-diagonal matrix elements from a superposition. So I went to numerous conferences and people are talking about coherences. So you go and you talk to them and you say, well, if you look at the papers I wrote in 91, this is very suspect. And so people start talking about photons. So they say, well, you see, the treatment is not right because here comes a photon. And when the photon arrives, it initiates dynamics in the molecule. And that's the reason why we have dynamics and so on and so on. So I said, okay, I have to redo this using quantized radiation fields so I can discuss photons. So I grabbed my colleague Shapiro and I said, let's do this together, and we did, and we sent it in, and this is what we got. These are the reviews. This is three reviews. This work is all known, so you can't publish it. And the second review is, this is great stuff, publish it immediately to resolve major issues in the field. And the third one is, you can't publish it because it's all wrong. So I just want those of you who are logically oriented to realize that this is not the law of the excluded middle. There's no middle excluded here. Whichever one you hold, that's on this list, right? So if you have a view, you know, you're not alone. All of them are already represented. In fact, when it was resent in for review again, three different people came up with the same statistics, the statistics of reviews. Very interesting topic. Maybe when I retire, I'll study the statistics of reviews. But I just want to point out the all wrong people. It's very interesting. One of the all wrong people did not say why it's all wrong. One of the all, maybe in the audience, one of the all wrong people who did explain why it was all wrong. And I took that problem to my fourth year class in quantum mechanics. And I said, show that this all wrong argument is suspect. And it took them 10 minutes to say that the all wrong argument is all wrong. So it's all right. But having tried the, you know, this is the quantized approach. So the quantized approach for isolated systems, I'll show it to you now. It's in PNAS, published a few months back. And then I'll show you the open system one, which is just coming, which just came out in PhysRev 8. So very quickly, because the answer is the same, I start out with a radiation field which is quantized. This is a completely arbitrary radiation field expanded in number states. I'll just write it like this for simplicity. And then the initial state is a product of the electric field times the initial state of the molecule. And then you can just do the perturbation theory. And this is one photon absorption. This is a completely general expression as to what you get after one photon absorption. The epsilon is the field amplitude. Number of photons in the mode, volume of the cavity, frequency, and so on and so on. And then I can create a density matrix. And then the density matrix, of course, is an entangled molecule radiation field density matrix. So I'm only interested in the molecule, so I trace over the radiation field, and that gives me this state, which is these coefficients that I showed you before, that of the creation from the electric field, times the states which are written with the epsilon. These are the states of the molecule, these are the energies, this is the degeneracy, the dipole transition matrix element. I just want to show you a result. If you do a pulsed laser case and the pulse is over, once again you get these terms which are time evolution. But if you do a black body radiation, the density matrix for the radiation is a collection of number states with these weights depending upon the temperature T, and then you get once again that it's a mixture of having excited with a bunch of these number states, and each one of these number states just creates a non-time evolving piece. So once again, this approach gives you no evolution within coherent sources. Okay, so what are people in the literature, what is this discussion? And how does this resolve the discussion? So some people said in the literature, coherence of the molecule is independent of the source of the excitation. This is obviously wrong if you're considering time evolution, because we just showed you that it depends heavily on the nature of the excitation. With weak light, photons arrive at widely separated times, and when they do, they give the molecule a kick, which initiates the dynamics. So this brings us right into the business of measurement, right? So you can only talk about photons arriving at widely separated times if you measure them. You can only talk about particle picture of light if you're doing an experiment which is a particle picture of light. And from my picture, my view, I don't see that happening in these experiments, in these natural systems. Again, weak light arrives at widely separated times. And then the incident molecule gives a kick. And what people actually are saying is the following. You see, what happens is you have a stationary state of the molecule, and in comes this fixed energy photon, and it's causing a kick, which is causing the dynamics. It's absolutely impossible. Because if you take a stationary state and you assume that the photon is a fixed energy, you don't get time evolution. You get fixed energy transition. You start with a fixed energy, you put in a photon of fixed energy, you get fixed energy. So this, too, is not correct, even though it does appear in the literature recently. The other one is incoherent light can be composed of ultra-short femtosecond pulses. So I'm doing an ultra-short femtosecond experiment. So what I'm doing is I'm finding out pieces of what this incoherent thing is doing, because each one of these femtosecond experiments is contributing with a random phase to the overall. Well, you know, this is a very... Howard, I didn't fix your, I'm sorry. Okay, I'll come back a second. So the physics is actually the ensemble average. That is to say, nature is the ensemble average. You want to go in and look at realizations, you can expand the electric field in any basis you want. You can expand it in nanosecond pulses, you can expand it in, not nanosecond because of, it's too wide in frequency. You can expand it in picosecond, you can expand it in femtosecond, nanosecond, microsecond. That's not the physics, that's just a computational tool. And if you want to prefer a basis, you should actually use one which has to do with the emission of light. So I was talking to Howard and he told me that there is an analogy, but then this is not correct. It's not the preferred ensemble fallacy. It's a related fallacy in your field. This is not the right terminology, so I should. Oh, partition ensemble fallacy. Thank you. I didn't, for some reason, it got missed. Okay, so I just want to say you have to be careful to note that there is an initial coherent excitation which is transient, and that, again, that's gone in a very short time. What about open systems? Because after all, maybe there's something different about open systems. So Leonardo Pachon and I just did this model, which is really quite interesting. I just point out that there's related work by Manchal, and then Ivan Casal has published a paper recently called Does Coherence Influence Energy Transport in Photosynthesis? That just came out maybe a month ago, and he basically comes to the same conclusions as I'm coming to. I just call them to your attention. So this is the model that we chose because we did a non-Markovian exact calculation on a system which It's obviously not a synthetic light harvesting system, but we think it contains a lot of the essential physics. So there's a particle in a harmonic oscillator, and it is subject to a heat bath. So this would be a protein environment at which the system is coupled. And then the black body radiation comes in and causes dynamical evolution on this system. And we want to see the dynamical evolution in the presence of the background heat bath, modeling a kind of protein in the presence of black body radiation. I should just point out that this problem turns out to be very interesting because there is, I can't talk about it here, but I can certainly talk about it in privately. There's an issue called canonical non-typicality, which appears prominently in this problem. And it has to do with the fact that you can treat this problem in two ways. One is the correct way and one is not. The correct way is to first equilibrate the system with the bath and then put the black body radiation on. That's what happens in, quote, real life. Others have done it a different way, and doesn't give you this correct result, where you turn on both of these things at the same time. And that's just not the right way to go. And that's this canonical non-typicality issue, which I wouldn't mind talking about. Okay, so what do? We did this influence functional approach where you can write the density matrix of the system, this is the off-diagonal element in the energy basis, as a linear map from the initial system through these J's. This takes you from the state nu nu to the state nm. This takes you from the off-diagonal nu mu to the state nm. And this is exact. And it looks like Krauss, but it turns out it's not. It looks like Krauss because it's a nice linear map. This is exact. Does not assume initial separability of the system and the bath. It allows a coupled system and bath. And so here is the oscillator. Here's the oscillator. Here is the bath. And we've done it with system coupled to two baths, system coupled to one bath, and so on. And the result, just to summarize, what happens? Well, it's straightforward. You know what happens. You have a system that's coupled to a bath. In comes light. The light now excites the system. And then everybody relaxes. Everybody relaxes to a steady state. And that's exactly what happens. You only see transient coherences. So with a set of exaggerated parameters, because if we use the parameters for analogous to light harvesting system, you don't see almost anything at all. Here's the kind of thing you'll see in the ground state matrix element and density matrix. You'll see oscillations that go away. If you look at couplings between diagonal elements of the density matrix to the ground state, for example, you'll see everything sort of evolving because of the initial transients, and then it all comes to equilibrium. Same thing here. All of these are transient responses to the fact that all of a sudden the system found itself in a new environment. First it was coupled to the background. Now all of a sudden somebody comes in and excites it with black body, and all these relaxation processes are just relaxation, and what you get is a system which is in a steady state. In actuality, it relaxes to the temperature of the heat bath because the black body radiation coupling is much too small, which is why a plant actually survives. Here's this plant that has this 273 temperature surrounding. If it decided to come into equilibrium with the black body, it would be at 5,500 degrees, and it would cook. So it doesn't cook because heat is transferred from the sun through the plant into the background. Okay, so very quickly, very, very quickly, I just point out that there are some issues. The experiments are actually molecules isolated from the full environment. If you take the entire apparatus that I showed you at the beginning, it's still very small compared to the light. The light's 500 nanometer wavelength. This guy may be 20 nanometers, 50 nanometers in size, so the light actually does excite non-locally. It excites energy eigenstates. Situation is very similar in retinal and regarding the rates, and I'll call your attention to a paper that I wrote with Kunihito Hoki and published in 2011, and one coming out with Timur Cherbel. An amusing paper coming out with Ignacio Franco, where you see these beautiful oscillations going like this in a different molecule in polyacetylene, they look so coherent, you would, you know, you'd stake your salary on it. And they turn out to be incoherent oscillations, not coherent. There are transients, we've studied them, we try to regenerate the you know, maybe they regenerate somehow or other, can't get them to regenerate. We've looked at the wave functions for coherently and incoherently prepared states, and that's in an archive. And so in summary, the 2D photon echo experiments, highly enlightening about the system Hamiltonian, system bath interaction, persistence of coherence under coherent excitation. Are they relevant to nature? So far, I say doubtful, since everything goes on within coherent light. And of course, there are lots of interesting questions related to the fact that this is a big system, and certainly worth considerable attention. But with respect to these excitations, I don't think they mean anything to nature. Thank you.
So the question I have is related to sort of an issue you haven't addressed, which is the issue of whether the decoherence times are relevant for the rate, you know, possibly relevant for the rate or efficiency of the photosynthetic process.
Right. So I'll just suggest that you look at this paper by Ivan Casal, which appeared, I think, last month in Journal of Physical Chemistry Letters, with several other co-authors. They conclude no, that it is not relevant to the efficiency of the energy transfer process.
That's a specific conclusion for a specific model. Or what I'm sort of referring to is, you know, if you go back and look at Forster's, you know, work in the 40s and 50s on energy transfer, the conversion from sort of the decoherence time enters into the rate constant that Forster calculates, right? And so, you know, basically because before the decoherence time, there's sort of a quantum mechanical T squared kind of evolution that gets turned off at some typical time tau, so you get a bunch of intervals that look something like tau squared. And you know, the number of those intervals is proportional to the time length that you look at, so you get a rate. Are you saying that kind of analysis of Forster's is wrong in principle, or just saying that the decoherence times don't really matter for the photosynthetic systems, the electronic decoherence times?
Again, I have not studied the energy transfer. But again, my picture is that if I had a collection of sites amongst which energy transfer had to occur, then I would compute this by looking at stationary eigenstates of the collection, and I have not gotten, I mean, very careful here, but I have not gotten to the point where I understand how the photosynthetic efficiency relates to the character of the stationary eigenstate, which I believe is created under incoherent excitation. So that's something I want to study. And with respect to the Forster rate, it's a question of whether the decoherence is faster than other processes or not. That's what I'm spatially. Yeah, I'm. No, but also the question is, how do those coherences enter into a proper treatment of the energy transfer among systems?
That's the bath of the coherence after the cross in the system's
Right, so if you, so that's David's, no, it's David's question. David's question is, right. So I'm just pointing out that at the moment, I would require an analysis that I don't have yet, which is what is the relationship between the efficiency of the process and the character of the stationary state, which in turn reflects the nature of the coupling to the bath. Right, but I do not believe, but just a moment. I do not agree that the excitation is localized on a site which subsequently hops from one place to another. That's exactly my point. My point is that the excitation is over the entire exciton state. Yeah.
So I have just one question on the distinction between the laser-driven experiments in the labs, because if I think of a laser, it's something I turn on in the morning, and after a short few transients, since it's not coherently driven, it also has no coherences. So I wrote a paper on that. I never had the positive B referees. I only had A and C, but it was eventually accepted like your
paper.
Well,
the question is not the turning on of the laser. The question is the laser incident on the molecule, which means that makes a difference, because it's in fact the interaction between the light and the molecule which initiates the process of entry. Okay, sure.
So I think this is related to some of the discussion that we just had, but maybe just to put it in a kind of different light. If I think about the coherent state that's prepared by coherent superposition of levels versus the incoherent state which is prepared, and I ask, is there an effect, let's say I have a non-adiabatic curve crossing problem, is there any difference in what will happen in that curve crossing problem, depending on whether the state is coherent or incoherent? And in a sense, going back to the theorem of Brumer and Shapiro in the 1980s, it doesn't really matter whether that superposition is coherent or incoherent in terms of how much will actually go through a curve crossing.
Okay, so the treatment, this is an interesting question. So the question that, the way we address this question about incoherent versus coherent with respect to curve crossing or whatever, is to ask the following question. If I have cis-trans isomerization, then everybody studies it as a time-evolving process. You excite the cis, it goes over the trans, you look at the quantum yield, and so on. If I am correct in some sense that things are happening, not in some sense, if I'm correct, when you see me, you're seeing me with an incoherent superposition of states, then how do I, for example, understand this quantum yield? Can I show you that the quantum yield, which is the same question as you're asking, comes out of the stationary eigenstates? The answer, it absolutely does. If I take the stationary eigenstates of a retinal model that previously gave me correct quantum yields for time evolution, and just look at a partitioning of that stationary state onto geometric configurations of cis and trans, I get exactly the same quantum yield. So, yes, it's embedded in the states, without question.
Yeah. Maybe it would help to clarify something, or maybe I'm the only one who's confused about this. When you show these oscillations and say, well, it's just relaxation, or you talk about the other work that I guess is published that you said shows that you get lots of oscillations, but that's not coherent.
Yes.
I'm confused by what that means.
Yeah,
what are oscillations that aren't coherent? And if you could answer in terms of specific levels and the frequencies of the oscillations with respect to them, that, at least for me, would help clarify what's going on.
Okay, so one thing at a time. These oscillations are coherent oscillations,
mm-hmm.
but they relax, and they're simply the ringing of the system in response to the introduction of a new perturbation. Here the system was coupled to a bath, it's perfectly happy, in comes a perturbation, there's coherent evolution, and it relaxes. Now the question is, this coherent evolution occurs over a time scale which is very short. So if you're talking about a photosynthetic system, which is subject, or vision, which is subject to light for an extended period of time, what you're talking about is not this domain here of transient coherent evolution. You're talking about this domain here where nothing is happening coherently.
So just if I could clarify,
sure.
you're envisioning, for example, that those frequencies are the electronic transition frequencies, not the differences between two nearby levels. Is that right? In other words, that omega naught that you are...
the oscillations between the levels of this particular harmonic oscillator.
In particular, the ground state and the first... The trouble that I'm having is,
yes.
Of course, the real issue that's coming up in all of the photosynthetic systems isn't this. It's, I have at least a three-level system where, for example, if I'm imagining, as for many people have discussed, David has written about extensively, am I imagining, for example, vibrational coherences
okay.
in an electronic excited state,
right.
then
what?
There is no coherence between either of those upper levels and the ground initial state,
okay.
only between the two.
So in this case, in the isolated molecular case, I don't have to go back, we are talking about the state of the excited, of the excitation, of the excited state. We're not talking about coherences between the ground state and the excited electronic
yeah.
state, but just coherences within the excited electronic state, which is consistent with what the interpretation that has been going on in terms of the electronic coherence, i.e. electronic coherences between levels 100 wave numbers separated from one another. Wait. So that's in the excited electronic state. There is a difference here because it is a simple model and it is an oscillator and there are no electronic transitions. So in this case, it's not an excited electronic case, but I don't see in principle why there should be any difference.
No, there's a very important difference,
yeah,
which
right.
is it doesn't matter if it's vibrational or electronic. The point is here, you are talking about a coherence at the resonant frequency of the absorbed photon, whereas in the other case, which is more relevant to what's being observed
right.
in the photosynthetic systems on these rather long timescales, the coherence is at a much, much lower frequency. And I think what you're saying is, you're forgetting this example for the moment, that regarding something like vibrational coherences, or let's just not use the word vibrational. Let's say I'm dumb. I don't know what those levels are. They're just levels, right?
Right.
It sounds to me like what you're saying is with incoherent light, you do get that kind of low frequency coherence and not the high frequency coherence.
No,
from
no. What I'm saying, okay, let me be specific. Let me again not focus on this model because this model has its limitations, as you point out. But in this treatment, all the states that you're seeing here are the states created in the excited electronic state. Okay? So when I talk about these time-evolving coherences, they are coherences in the excited electronic state. Which are not produced by incoherent light because incoherent light gives me this. Incoherent light will give me a mixture of these guys, which are each time independent. I don't get any time dependence anywhere. I get incoherent excitation of an excited manifold, and after some relatively short time, I get stationary states. I have no idea where you're getting time evolution from. Ah, so the relatively... that is correct. So let me just explain that there is simply no time evolution after a short transient. Wait, I'll explain. We've calculated those transients. Those transients might be 100 femtoseconds or whatever. They could even be 150 femtoseconds. But it doesn't matter because the light is on for at least seconds. So we are in a domain well out of the transient region. Nobody can deny the fact that if I take a molecule and I couple it to a electric field, it will induce dynamics. The question is, what happens after that?
Just
think of it this way. The incoherent source is exactly the same as a black body bath. And you know very well that if I take a molecule and I put it in contact with a black body bath, it just relaxes. Nothing else happens. You get eigenstates of the Hamiltonian. You can, yeah.
Paul, real quick, I think if I can add in terms of a picture for the differences, right? So when using coherent light, you're getting these states which are coherently mixed, and you're looking at the transient evolution between that superposition state. When using incoherent light and the system you have here, the states you have are the eigenstates of the entire system. And so with incoherent light, you're exciting it. But now the question is, what does that stationary state look like? And the information coming from the coherently prepared states tells you, look, all these guys are talking to one another, and here's the correlation length. And that's going to be exactly the same thing you find from your incoherent state preparation.
No,
so spatially, it's not A, B, C, D, you know, one excitation here and that. In that picture you have, it's exactly the same thing that you would get from a coherently prepared state and watch the time evolution.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Okay. There.
Perhaps before it comes to
let me just.
Yeah, the speaker gets the last word.
Yeah, the speaker has it all.
The speaker has the last word. The situation, the question is, Duane, the question is time evolution. I do not deny for a second that the experiments are telling you about the Hamiltonian and about the coupling and about all this stuff. Of course they're telling you about that. But you know, if I take the Schrodinger equation, I know the Hamiltonian or the Liouville equation, I know the Hamiltonian, and I know all the details that go into it, that doesn't tell me a thing about time evolution. Time evolution requires initial conditions. And the initial conditions for the subsequent time evolution using coherent light and incoherent light are different. So therefore, the time evolution is different. Now, the interesting thing is that the time evolution in the incoherent case just goes away.
OK, so the bad because it comes to blows, and you can slug it out.